We're going to read together in the book of Psalms, and we're reading in Psalm number 23. Psalm number 23. And just before we do read, a question. Who is this psalm about? We can read it as if it is a psalm about David, about David's faith, about his confidence, his trust in God. And it's true that David's faith and confidence shine through these beautiful verses. But David doesn't have the leading role in this psalm. The psalm is not about David. Notice, first of all, that the first word in the psalm is Lord. Well, in our version, the first word is the, but that is not in the Hebrew. In the Hebrew, it begins with Lord, and Lord is there at the very end. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now, the way the psalm is wrapped up like that is very telling. It's really a matter of poetic technique in Hebrew poetry. And what David wants us to understand is that the leading role in the psalm belongs to the Lord and not to himself. It is, we might say, about the Lord from beginning to end. It's true that David's faith and confidence shine through the psalm. But these are only a response to what David knows about the character of God. The psalm is not about David. It's about the Lord. And that matters to us. It matters to us because what it says about the Lord may be true not only for David, but also for us. Then notice, secondly, that in our version, the word Lord is written in capital letters. And I hope you know that when you're reading your Old Testament and you see the word Lord written in capital letters, it is written so in order to signal to you that in the Hebrew, the name Yahweh is used. You will remember that when God spoke to Moses at the burning bush, Moses asked him what his name was. And doubtless Moses was thinking of the many gods that were known in Egypt. Which one of the gods is speaking to me? What is your name? And God replied, not by giving a name, but simply by saying, I am. A name which signifies that he is the origin of everything. There is no other God beside him. He is the origin of all. He is the great I am. And this, says God in Exodus 3:15, is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. Does it matter that you know this? After all, what is in a name? My name is David, which means beloved. So, in my case, it really doesn't mean very much at all. But in God's case, it means everything. For Yahweh is the covenant name of God, the name by which God sealed his covenant with his people. It signifies his covenant commitment to his people forever. It is a name that confirms that his whole being will be faithful to his covenant promises. And he will keep his covenant because his name is at stake. We don't use the word covenant very often, but ministers tend to use it more than others when couples come before them to be married, and they say, into this covenant you are now about to enter in token of these things, these covenant things, these rings are given and received, and it's important that you use their right name. I once had a couple, and she called him Doodles. And I had to explain before they signed the register that they had to use their real names. But he was a romantic. And when he signed it Doodles. And I had to say to them, I'm sorry, you are not legally married. And they had to postpone the honeymoon while they went to see the registrar and got new forms to sign. And they were signed in the right name, because the right name matters. It's the right name that binds you. And God gives his name to bind himself in covenant with his people. And David touches on that in this psalm. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. His name matters, and it matters to him. It's the name by which he makes covenant with us, and his glory and his honor depends upon his faithfulness to his name. So what's in his name? Everything. And that's why it matters that we notice it in our Bibles, and why it matters that we notice it in this psalm. Yahweh is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of Yahweh forever. Amen. May God bless his word to us. Lord, teach us the truth and help us believe, and show us in your word the Saviour's love. Amen. Some years ago, when our children were rather little, we had a holiday in the Highlands. And we were driving home, and the weather was typical Scottish Highland weather in the spring. It was utterly miserable, cold and wet. And as we were driving along, we passed a field, and in the field we saw a shepherd, an old shepherd, who was holding a heavy ewe by the hind legs. And I thought, I know what's wrong. I used to work for the National Farmers Union, and I had an idea what the problem was. And so we stopped the car, And I plodded off into the field, and my children came with me. They were still just little things, but they managed to make their way through this muddy field to where this old shepherd was standing, looking absolutely exhausted. The problem was that the ewe was about to produce a lamb, but the lamb was coming out the wrong way. And the certainty was that they would lose the lamb and also lose the ewe. And I asked him if I could help, and he explained that he was waiting on his daughter coming. He was hoping his daughter would wonder where he was because he had been away so long, and she would come searching for him, and she would help to bring forth the ewe. He could not do it because he had shepherd's hands. And he looked at my hands and he said, "You could do it. You've got horns like a lassie." And so I rolled up my sleeves and kind of put my hand in, and he was going to give me instructions, and I was nervous and afraid. And happily, his daughter appeared. And I and my children saw the wonder of that little lamb being born, and the children were full of joy. And we got home, and we wondered what was for tea, and all we had in the freezer were lamb chops. And I was the only one that ate my tea that evening. And when I look back on that, I never think of how committed that sheep was. But I do remember how committed that old shepherd was. Can I ask you a question? Are you a committed Christian? We often speak of Christians, and some of them being committed Christians. Are you a committed Christian? And I wonder, if you are a committed Christian, do you feel secure and sure of blessing because you are so committed to the Lord? But then you know your own heart, and you know how fickle you often are, how you blow hot and cold, how unfaithful you sometimes can be. And the truth is, if you really know your own heart, you know how uncommitted you really are. And if your Christian hope, your hope of God's grace and blessing and life eternal, is dependent upon how committed you are to Him, then you know it's a very fragile and uncertain hope indeed. Well, the good news of this psalm is that it turns the whole idea of commitment upside down. Or it turns it the right way up. Because your hope is not dependent upon the strength of your commitment to Him, but it is certain because of His commitment to you. This is who your God is. He is Yahweh, the God who has committed Himself to His covenant with His people. And isn't that beautiful? That the Lord, in all His nature and being, is wholly committed to you. And your hope,
does not rest upon yourself, but it rests upon Him. All I want to do with you this evening is walk through this psalm with you. I was at a seminar a number of years ago where Eric Alexander was talking about preaching, and we learned so much. And I remember him saying that a good sermon has 3 points, and ideally they all begin with the same letter. So let me warn you, this is a very bad sermon, because we are going to notice 5 things. But happily, they all begin with a P. First thing is that your shepherd has committed himself to provide for you. Verses 1 and 2, the Lord Yahweh is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. When I finished at St. Columba's, I was given some lovely gifts, and one dear lady in the church gave me a picture for my study. And it's the picture of a pleasant, peaceful, tranquil scene. There is a beautiful, lush green meadow and a little sparkling stream, and sheep grazing contentedly upon the grass, and an old shepherd standing with his arm upon the fence and a pipe in his mouth and his sheepdog by his feet, and beneath it are the words, the Lord is my shepherd. It was a lovely gift. I've never put it on my study wall, because it's quite unbiblical, and it is not at all encouraging, because when I look at that picture, the peace and the tranquility of it, it is not a picture of my life, and it's not a picture of the life of sheep in the wilderness of Judea. For them, there was little peace and no tranquility. They lived in a harsh environment. Food is scarce, water is precious, the ground is hard with sharp flint stones that can cut the feet of the sheep. There are no clear paths, wild animals always threaten, and the sun is unforgiving. And without a shepherd, the sheep die. And in this psalm, David is simply accepting that that is a picture of his normal life. His life is not that of a sheep in a peaceful Scottish meadow. The picture is of the harsh Judean wilderness. And in that environment, who is going to care and nourish David's spirit? And I think perhaps that some of you know what David is saying, because your normal Christian experience is not one of peace and tranquility. There are wonderful blessings in the Christian life, but we also know what it's like to be in need, and sometimes we feel that need deeply. We have a daily need of nourishment of soul as well as of the body. We are in constant need of refreshment and renewal. We are in need of guidance when we do not know where to turn or what our next forward step should be. You need comfort when you're walking in darkness. And you need to know that he will be with you in all of your tomorrows, even to the end of your days. And there are times when your need is so great that you feel you cannot be a real Christian at all. What this psalm shows us is a picture of real Christian life, with all its problems, all its cares, all its troubles, all its worries. The Christian life is not tranquility and peace, but one of constant need. And David says, this is my normal life. But, says David, whatever my circumstances might be, Yahweh, the covenant-keeping God, is wholly committed to providing for me. And because Yahweh is his shepherd, providing for him even in the harshest environments, he will lack for no good thing. He will lie down in green pastures. He will be led by quiet waters. Do you see that even in your faltering commitment and your waywardness and sometimes unfaithfulness, even in your normal Christian experience, which is one of need and one that is often troubled, because Yahweh is your shepherd, because your covenant-keeping God is committed to you, he will provide for you in the midst of your life, when your soul is hungry and thirsty, when your pathway is difficult and painful, and you cannot see the way forward. You will have a shepherd who nonetheless will provide for your need, not necessarily lavishly, but enough for this day. You have a shepherd who is committed to providing for you. And secondly, notice you have a shepherd who has committed himself to preparing your way. In verse 3, he guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Paths of righteousness possibly would be better translated simply as right paths. He guides me on right paths. Strange when you're in the wilderness of Judea. You look around and you can see no paths anywhere. But the shepherds know the paths. And he will guide us in right paths. He will prepare our way. Isn't it wonderful that you have a God who goes before you and prepares your way? I wonder if these words in the psalm remind you of anyone. Do they remind you of the Lord Jesus? Jesus, whose name is Yeshua, which means Yahweh, our Savior. Jesus, who says that he will call out his sheep and they will follow him. Jesus, who says that he will lead them and he will keep them. He will lead them in the right paths. Of course, the sheep only have a sheep's eye level view of things. They cannot see the way ahead the way the shepherd can. And so they listen to his voice and they follow him. They trust their shepherd. I remember being with some Bedouin in the wilderness, and we got on to talking about sheep. Well, I shouldn't say we got on to talking about sheep. Sheep is about the only thing they talk about. Women, children, and sheep, in reverse order. And this old Bedouin told me about, I think it was either his father or his grandfather, who wakened up one morning and his sheep were gone. He could not find them anywhere. And so he went to his brother's encampment, which is always, first brother is always on the right-hand side, and he went and spoke to his immediate younger brother and said, "Have you seen my sheep?" And his brother had not seen his sheep. And so he went to the next brother, which is the brother on the left-hand side, and he said to that brother, "Have you got my sheep?" "No, I have not got your sheep. I have not seen your sheep." And he searched everywhere for his sheep. He could not find his sheep. And then he heard that there was to be a great sheep sale in the kingdom of Jordan. So he walked for 3 days down into the valley of the Dead Sea and across into Jordan to a town that was surrounded by sheep pens. And he spent 2 days searching among the sheep pens until he found his sheep. And he went to the mayor of the town and he explained that someone had stolen his sheep and they were being sold in the market. And the mayor said, "Well, can you prove that they're your sheep?" And of course, they have nothing on paper. But the old shepherd said, "Yes, I can prove they're my sheep." And the mayor went with him, and the old man stood beyond the sheep pens. And he called out his own sheep by name, and his sheep came to him. The man who was trying to sell the sheep had his right hand cut off, so that he would not do it again. "I call out my own sheep by name," says Jesus, "and they follow me, and I will go ahead of them, and they will follow me, because they know my voice." Jesus leads us in right paths, preparing our way. And from our sheep's eye view, we don't see very far ahead. But the shepherd sees the path. And so we follow him. This whole idea of preparing the path among the Bedouin involves the Bedouin walking ahead with his stick. And you can see the shepherd from time to time striking the ground with his stick. And I had asked about that. And my Bedouin friend said, "Snakes. He's clearing the ground of snakes. The sheep would not see them, but the shepherd did." Christians used to speak a lot about something called providence. Providence means to see beforehand and to prepare. I have a little quote I keep in my desk by the Puritan John Flavel, who said this: "Providence is wiser than you. And you may be confident it has suited all things better to your eternal good than you could do yourself if you were left to your own deciding. All things. And what is it the Apostle Paul says? All things work together for good. To them who love God, to those whom God has called. Isn't it wonderful that you have a shepherd who is wholly committed to you and goes ahead of you, preparing the way that you might walk in right paths? And he prepares all things, the pleasant surprises and the disappointments, the doors that open and the doors that close, the avenues that open up and the roadblocks. All prepared by him. I have often in past years said to my children a little mantra that I had prepared for them to prepare them for life. And here it is. His precious providences prepare our path so that we may walk in them. And it has been a blessing to hear my children from time to time repeat that when they have faced great disappointments. That he has seen ahead, and he has seen the right path, and he has said no to this. And sometimes yes to something else. And my children will now look to see what opens up, what God seems to be presenting to us as his way. Not always with certainty, but there are times when we say, the Lord is in this. And if you belong to him, he is committed to you. And he goes ahead and he prepares your way. I don't know if you know the story of Stonewall Jackson, the great American general during the Confederate Wars. And he was a Christian. And he was noted for his bravery. Though he would always say it had nothing to do with bravery, but he believed in the providence of God and that no bullet would strike him except at the Lord's command. He would drive into battle with great bravery, bravery that astonished his soldiers. But his answer was always, the matter is in the Lord's hand. He was coming home one night. He had gone with some of his officers to inspect enemy positions. He was coming through a little wood, and within that wood there were guards, Confederate soldiers guarding the path. But before they came to that point, the weather was very bleak. It was raining, and Stonewall Jackson noticed that one of his young lieutenants had no coat. So Stonewall Jackson took off his great coat and put it on the shoulders of this young man, and they were walking through this wood, and the guards, the outpost that was under Jackson's command, saw these soldiers coming towards them and thought it was the enemy and opened fire, and Jackson was shot. They would have recognized him if he had had his coat. but he did not have his coat. And although the wound itself was not serious, he took pneumonia. And when you have pneumonia, apparently, the doctors were able to give almost the hour of your death. And his wife was called to his bedside. And to everyone around him, this seemed like an immense tragedy. And they were so angered because it was a senseless accident. Why did he take his coat off? Why did the soldiers not recognize him? Why was it his own soldiers who shot him? And because it was going to be the hour of his death, his wife was brought in to sit with him. And Stonewall Jackson said, "How beautiful are the providences of God, because I have always prayed that I would die on the Sabbath day, and this is a Sabbath." Strange story. What a strange faith. But maybe not so strange, because we have a shepherd who prepares our way. And what may seem like tragic accidents can be his gracious blessings, if only we fully understood. Thirdly, notice the shepherd has committed himself to being present with you. In verse 4, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me." Notice how verse 3 runs into verse 4. "He guides me in the right paths, and even though I walk through the valley of the shadow, you are with me." In the King James, of course, it's the valley of the shadow of death. That's not a good translation, and the NIV puts a little note to highlight that. The Hebrew simply says the valley of deep darkness. And that can be death. But there are other dark shadows that can come over us. Experiences of life that make us uncertain, that confuse us, that trouble us and make us afraid. Bereavement, sickness, despair, depression, hopelessness. There are times when the right path is through the valley of the shadow. And in those times, when the darkness comes, we can no longer see the shepherd and we feel helpless and alone, and we cannot hear his voice, and we say, "Where is God in this? How will a sheep survive in the valley of darkness?" They will survive because unseen and unheard, the shepherd is still with them, still present with them, still preparing their way, still keeping them safe. "You are with me," says David. How does David know that when God is unseen and unheard? He knows that because his Lord, his shepherd, is Yahweh, the covenant God of Israel, who is committed to his people. And notice, fourthly, that the shepherd has committed himself to place a table for him. "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies." Well, we ask that question, why does a shepherd sometimes lead us into the valley of darkness? And we suggested because it was for us the right path. There is in the Judean wilderness a place called the Wadi Kelt, and those of you who have visited Israel will, I'm sure, have visited the Wadi Kelt. It's a deep, deep gorge that slices through the Judean wilderness. And you can go down and you can walk in the Wadi Kelt. And I've done so. And it's the strangest of places. At times you can touch the wall on either side of you. At times you're in total darkness because this is so deep that the sun does not penetrate. And the air moves through it and whistles. And it's eerie and frightening. And I knew all this before I went in. And still I was frightened. And there were times when David would have led his sheep down into the Wadi Kelt, because there are times in Judea when the only water you can find in the wilderness is deep in the valley of the shadow. That's the only place where water always runs. And sometimes he will take us into the valley because it's the right path, and it's the right path because that is the place where we will find blessing. And the greatest blessing of all will be the blessing of his presence, and to know that that is everything. When I was in my late 20s, if you'll forgive a personal reminiscence, when I was in my late 20s and early 30s, I went through a long period of depression that lasted about 4 or 5 years, and for 3 years of that it was utter darkness. A time when the only verse in the Bible that meant anything to me was that passage in Jeremiah where Jeremiah accuses God and says to God, "You have deceived me because you are stronger than I am." And I decided I would no longer believe in God, because to believe in God was agony, because it was to raise hopes that would never be answered. And I would lie in my bed and I would do everything I could not to pray, because it would only break my heart more when no answer came, and no answer ever came. And it was during that time that God, in the strangest of his providences, brought to me a shabby, drunken window cleaner. And he came to the door and he wanted to clean the windows, and I brought him in to clean the windows, and he cleaned the windows in my bedroom. And then he went into the lounge and he cleaned the windows there, but he couldn't open the window to clean the outside because the window frames in the lounge were all stuck up with years of paint and new coats of paint, and it was never properly done, and you understand the problem. The windows will not open anymore. And he came back into my room and he said to me, our house was at Annesline Cross above where the Brethren Mission used to be, and we were on the top floor. And he said to me, I'll clean them from the outside. And he opened my windows and he looked out and he said, aye, there's a ledge there. And the ledge was about that wide. And he said, I'll just shimmy along the ledge. Or rather, he said, I'll just shimmy along the ledge. And I thought, I can't let him do this. So I engaged him in conversation. How did you become a window cleaner? And he told me the story. He had been doing a PhD in mathematics and he was almost ready to complete, and someone published a work on what he had been doing. They had published before him, and he couldn't complete his PhD, and he started drinking and he became a window cleaner. And he looked at me and all my books and all the papers that were lying there, and he said to me, what have you been doing? I said, well, I've been doing a PhD as well. And he said, what are you doing it in? I said, I'm doing it in the structures of theoretical meaning. Ah, he says, and what's your conclusion? And I said, well, ultimately, all meaning, whether in conversations like ours, whether it's in art, whether it's in music, whether it's in science, whether it's in mathematics, ultimately, all meaning comes from God. And he said to me, I says, you must believe in God. And I didn't, and I wouldn't. And with every fibre in my being, I was saying, no, I don't. And then I heard my voice saying, yes, I do. And I didn't know where it had come from. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And the God who in his gracious providence goes before me had opened a right path in the form of that drunken window cleaner. And I spoke a word, and that word was like his rod touching my soul. And I thought, I believe in God, not because I want to, but because that's who I am. At the root of my being, whether I like it or not, that's who I am. And that for me was a turning point. Sometimes God takes us through the darkest of valleys because that's where we will find the blessing. And the blessing for me was to realize that I was a Christian, not because of anything I had done, but simply because it was who I was. God had made me what I was, and all I needed was to know that he was there and to hear his voice. And all of the books and all of the things that had caused me such great trouble were nothing. Just to hear his voice, to know his presence, was everything. And so says David, the shepherd places a table before us, even in the presence of my enemies. He anoints my head with oil, and my cup overflows. This, of course, echoes the first verse, where God prepares for the sheep who are in want, with green pastures and quiet waters. He restores their soul. But now everything is on a higher level. He prepares a table before me. He anoints my head with oil. My cup overflows. It's the picture of the shepherd who sits with his sheep, who pours oil from his flask upon their wounded head, who brings the ointment of healing out of the flask, who prepares their table. Now the care is hands-on and personal. And there is a sense in which you never come to that unless you come through the dark valley. And lastly, the shepherd is committed to pursuing you. In verse 6, surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That word goodness there is faithful goodness, covenant goodness. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. Follows not a great translation, because in the Hebrew it means to pursue or to hunt down. It's the word that's used in 1 Samuel when David and his men come back to the camp and they find that the Amalekites have raided the camp and the Amalekites have taken their wives and their children. And David and his men pursue the Amalekites, and they pursue them until many of the men are so tired that they cannot continue, but David and those who can go on pursuing the Amalekites. Their wives and their children have been taken. Those that they love will be slaves of the Amalekites, and they hunt down that Amalekite raiding party and they kill the Amalekites and they bring those that they love back to themselves. They pursued the Amalekites, and the same word is used there. Surely goodness, God's faithful covenant goodness and his love will pursue you all the days of your life. Isn't it wonderful to think that no matter what happens to us, no matter what we go or how far astray we are, how unfaithful we so often are, in the midst of all of our troubles and all of our cares, even when we say, Lord, you have deceived me and I will not believe in you, he will not stop pursuing us and hunting us down. He will never let us be taken captive. He will never let us go. And we will dwell in the house of Yahweh forever. Not because we are wonderful, committed Christians, but because he is a wonderful and committed shepherd.